or are there any big words that I don't understand? It's just all too easy somehow. You know, Jesus finds Philip and says, follow me, and he does. And Philip finds Nathaniel and says, come and see, and he does. And there's a bit of hesitation because he didn't think anything good could come out of Nazareth. But it sounds too easy, too glib. And I look in John's Gospel to see why John is speaking in this way. And you can find the clues. There's a clue right almost at the end of John's Gospel when he tells us that I've written these things down so that you will understand that Jesus is the Messiah and you will follow him. So that's the core that's going through. This is what we've got to hold in our minds. And the other thing that came to me, this is all the first chapter in St. John's Gospel. Now, we know that when John wrote his Gospel in beautiful flowing Greek, he didn't put chapters and verses in. They've been put in much later to help us to know where we've got to and help each other to find the passage. But John, in this early part of what he's writing, sets out his stall for what's to come. And the very first verse says, in the beginning was the Word. And then the Word became flesh. I read a very interesting article a long time ago now, but it sticks in my mind as being very important. The word that John wrote was a Greek word, logos. But of course, as the gospel began to spread, and particularly as it went into other parts of the Roman world, they wanted it in Latin because that was what they could understand. And it was the time of Emperor Constantine in the 4th century that it was really set in, I won't say stone, though it was in time, that when he translated the word that God used, logos, scholars translated it in the word which is verbum, which is Latin word meaning command. Whereas in the Greek word logos, he got much more of a nuanced word. That means it could easily be translated into Latin as the word sermo, from which we get sermon, but which has the sense of a discourse. Not a word of command, but a word of engagement, of encouragement. And then when John says, in the beginning was the Word, if we translate that with, in the beginning was a conversation that God had with his created world. All that we know about the developing cosmos is still the conversation that God's having in bringing his creation to perfection. And when he said the Word was made flesh, if we translate that as the conversation was made in Jesus, so we hear something of what Jesus is trying to do with the people who follow him. Enter into an exploration. Listen to them as well as them listening to him, knowing where we all come from and who we are. And so when we read in John's Gospel, he's writing many, many years after all these things happened. He's had his whole lifetime pondering on what are the real truths that he wants to convey in the word that he's writing so that other people can understand it. And we hear these words of John coming down to us over the years, and we have to translate them into our experience as well. But John tells us about how Jesus called his first disciples, a little bit differently from what we hear in the other Gospels, because Andrew, John tells us, was a disciple of John the Baptist. These were the young men who followed John the Baptist to the River Jordan and found this new way of living, which was much more radical than what the Pharisees were telling them. These were young men in Galilee who were overpressed by the Romans, the hated rule of a foreign power, with all the taxation that they had to endure. and the rule of the Pharisees, the very conservative ways of the past and the rules and the commandments. And here comes John the Baptist, who puts it all on its head and says it's how you relate to God. And here's Jesus, who gives it in a much more powerful way. And so we see as John the Baptist begins to develop his disciples, then Jesus comes to John, and John says to Andrew, that's the one you should be following. And Andrew goes and says to his brother Peter, we found somebody who tells it like it is, come and see. And so Peter comes, and we've got Andrew and Peter, who are disciples of John, transferring their discipleship to following Jesus. And as Jesus moves along then from the Jordan and into Galilee, he finds other people, like Philip, who comes from the same village as Peter and Andrew. I've got in my mind this sort of a young person's searching for a new way of doing things in Galilee. All these young men sitting under their fig trees and reading their scriptures and seeing, you know, what is God doing among us? And here comes Jesus and says to Philip, follow me. Philip, who knows Peter and Andrew, here's something I'll do. And Philip goes to Nathanael and say, come and see. Here is something that's really vital and important. And as I say, Nathanael isn't ready to talk to anybody who comes from Nazareth. But Jesus is able to say to Nathanael, look, I saw you sitting under the fig tree. And then he leads them into thinking of the old stories, but putting a new slant on them, you know, about Joseph, Jacob, who was the one who God found. Jacob was a real bad lot. He was a deceiver, he was a thief, he'd had all sorts of things wrong in his life. But if you remember the story of how he saw the vision of the angels going up and down the ladder, and God said, you're the one I'm going to base my kingdom upon, and called him Israel. And here, in these little verses in John's Gospel, we see a pattern of an emerging group of people beginning to look at their scriptures differently and to follow a charismatic leader in Jesus who is able to see them as they are, but also see all the potential that might develop within them and for the sake of the kingdom. So when we read these stories, we have to translate them into how our discipleship is going to follow and what Jesus knows about us. How did we, just a question, I don't know whether any of you would like to volunteer an answer, perhaps you'll volunteer an answer to each other when we have coffee. How did you first come to discipleship? Who was it who first said to you, come and see or follow? I have to say, although I'd been a chapel girl all my life, I didn't find it very exciting in the little, it was a congregational chapel in those days that I went to, but it was my RE teacher at school who taught the Bible stories with such fervor because she believed them that made me want to read more and to learn more. The day I was ordained, I wrote to her and said thank you for what she'd started. I had a wonderful letter back. And I just, you know, can you talk to each other? Who was it who first stimulated the thoughts that you have? And then I go on to say, to whom should we be saying, come and see? Who is it in our acquaintances, our friends, who is it that we hear God saying to us, you know, they could follow, they could find what you have? And how do we do that? I'm confident that if we begin to think of God as a conversation and not as somebody far and far away, God is stimulating and releasing within us the desire to have conversation about what life really is and how we can live it, then, you know, perhaps we're on the way to finding something greater not just for ourselves, but to, as our last hymn talked about, grow your church, being able to welcome all those people for whom life isn't too good at the moment, all the anxieties about ordinary everyday life, and about our saying, well, look, come and see. Here we can find a kernel of something which is so much deeper and gives more meaning to faith if we can believe in the God who loves us, in the Christ who saves us, in the Spirit who dwells within us, and in a common humanity that makes us want to find this way of life which will last. This week sees the start of the prayer week of prayer for Christian unity. I think it's gone off the back burner at the moment, not so much about sort of seeking to share in things, and perhaps because that we're all conscious of our own weakness, and perhaps if we can begin to be more confident in our faith and in the growing of our church, we can speak again about how we Christians should work together. And we're going to turn in a moment to our prayers of intercession. And I want to tell you a story. It's just possible I've told you this story before, but you won't remember it. when I lived in Yorkshire, I went one day to preach in a chapel in the Yorkshire Dales. And there was a young woman there who told me this story, and it lives with me. She said, last week it was our all-age worship. And this woman came in with three small children. She said, they sat just in front of me, and they weren't used to being in church, and they were terribly badly behaved. They were pulling each other's hair and shuffling about. And she said, I closed my eyes. I could see this young woman getting more and more agitated. She said, I don't want her to leave. So I closed my eyes, and I said, oh, Lord, do let this woman find here what she's looking for. She said, I opened my eyes, and these three little children were sitting next to me on my row. It's just a lovely, simple little explanation. A prayer isn't just quietly praying. It's offering ourselves to do what we're asking God to perform within his world and saying that we're available. Thanks be to God.